We will have so much winning if I get elected that you may get bored with winning. Believe me, I agree. You'll never get bored with winning. We never get bored.
So it's been 1 year since Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. It has not been a year since he was inaugurated, but it has been 1 year since he won the election, since the election flipped. There's a couple of things I want to address right now. I want to address this past Tuesday's election, where, by the way, perhaps the Republicans got so sick of winning, they just decided to let the Democrats win. It's hard to say. Before I get into it, let me just say, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 227. My name is Melvin, and I appreciate so much that you are here. So it was huge what happened this past Tuesday night. And it's an off year election. Of course, you're even numbered years where 100% of the House and 1/3 of the Senate are up for elections. Those are considered off year elections. Presidential year elections, you know, every 4 years, if it's 08 or 04, 08, 12, 16, or 20. And those are all presidential years. Yeah, obviously, anyone that runs in those years, there's a ton of attention paid to those years. And then there's the off year elections. So what the crap are those? There's a few states, obviously New Jersey and Virginia, that have those off year elections. And I remember in 2013, and this is when I realized about Virginia especially, because the election of Terry McAuliffe was so big that year. In the off-year elections, so the even-numbered ones, where it's 100% of the House and 1/3 of the Senate, what you usually get is the party in power, which would be whoever the president is. If the party in power is a Democrat, then those off-year elections usually flip to Republicans and vice versa, with few exceptions, of course. One of those exceptions being George W. Bush, who managed to get even more Republicans all the way up until 2006, which, anyway, that's not generally the way it goes. And if you notice, you know, during 2010 and 2014, President Obama lost more and more of his Congress. And then the off year elections, these ones tend to almost always favor Republicans. When you think about media, especially conservative media, go to any city in America, flip on the AM radio, and if you're not listening to sports, and if you're not listening to some local hunting or fishing show or some local art show that's on the radio, if you're listening to politics, 99 times out of 100, you're going to hear conservative talk radio. And that's not a mistake. That's by design. We've had progressive talk radio in the country, and it's done pretty well. But nobody, not in radio, nobody in radio, if you own a radio station, you've obviously got some money. And if you got some money, you don't want to put somebody on the air like me that's going to argue for your taxes to go up, or at the very least, argue for your taxes to be fair. So Clear Channel made the decision to bring on all these Air America affiliates back in, I think it was 2002, 2003. And they did pretty well for a while. The affiliates did. Air America itself didn't have good leadership. It didn't have a good business plan. But it was clear that progressive talk radio, clearly, I mean, it had an audience. And it did pretty well. But then station owners started dropping it because they go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then with the election of one Barack Obama, those owners said, well, that's it. No more of this crap. And a lot of those stations start going away. Here in Portland, Oregon, we lost KPOJ. It immediately flipped to a sports station. This town already has a gang of sports stations. So what the hell happened with when they got one more sports station? Well, their audience was immediately cut in half, and it's never, ever recovered. But when you ask them, they say, well, the decision we made with regard to radio is because of business. Liberals don't understand business, so I don't expect you to understand. Of course, talk down to me. That's what I love. But we do understand business, and I understand numbers, and I understand shares. And the share is the percentage of the market that you have in any given town, any given market, a large, medium, or small market. And I watched the market numbers for KPOJ and some of these other stations that I listen to. And I watched and still watch. And it flipped to Fox Sports Radio, which was just super slap in the face. Holy crap. And I watched their numbers get cut in half, and that's where they've been ever since. It's still on the air because it doesn't matter. So we don't have progressive talk radio because the station owners, they don't want to hear from us. They want to hear from conservatives. The conservative hosts are saying what the conservative owners want them to say. You go anywhere in America, no problem. There are some towns in America, especially if you go into the deep south, where they don't just have Rush Limbaugh on one station. They have Rush Limbaugh on two stations. They'll do a full broadcast and then a replay on one station and then a replay on another. I understand this is radio, all inside baseball stuff. But yeah, Rush will be on two stations. And you'll hear Rush and Hannity and Levin and Barry and all these guys. And so what you end up with are people that spend a lot of time listening to the radio. And definitely people that spend a lot of time driving, which is super strange because I spend a lot of time driving. I still ended up a progressive. I guess it just matters who you are. If you spend a lot of time listening to the radio, music can get kind of boring, especially if it's top 40. It's the same things over and over again. But if you listen to politics, the only thing available for all this crap we hear about the liberal media, the only thing that's available is politics. So when these off-year elections come around, generally the only people that are aware of them are conservatives or people that have been made conservative or lean conservative because they listened to talk radio. And then they get home and, you know, or they get on their Facebook feed and there's more conservative crap. And then they flip on MSNBC, a supposed liberal channel. And they'll have conservatives on there, and then they flip over to Fox, and of course, that's nothing but a GOP propaganda network. And then they'll turn to Meet the Press, and you know, 7 out of 10 guests or 8 out of 10 guests on Meet the Press are conservative. And then they'll go over to CNN. CNN's got some more conservatives on. Hell, they used to have Jeffrey Lord working for them. But all the while, you'll hear, liberal media, liberal media. What liberal media are you talking about? So with the off-year election, here it comes. I go, man, the president's party is going to grow even more. But then something strange happened. This past Tuesday was no doubt what I would refer to as a night of firsts. Because Democrats didn't just win. They absolutely trounced the competition. And there's a couple of factors there that I believe. The first of which is going to be indivisible. Seriously, raise your hands to the sky for indivisible. It is unbelievable what these guys have been able to do. And another thing would be our revolution. And which is Bernie Sanders' group. And some of the candidates that were run by our revolution actually won on Tuesday. And then there's brand new Congress. And you can look all these up on Facebook or do Google searches, and the sites for all these will come right up. Brand new Congress. And a bunch of people that are a part of the Brand New Congress project, they also won. We've talked about Brand New Congress on this show. And I go, whoa, if this can happen this year, off-year election, in an environment where we are just not just marinating, but drowning in conservative media, for people to get out and vote like they did on Tuesday, bloody hell. So let me get into good news, bad news with respect to this.
You're right. Liberals, you were right.
Damn right we were. So there's an article over at HuffPo, and it lists all of the gigantic victories that we had this past Tuesday. Obviously, the one that everyone is aware of is Danica Roem, who was elected in Virginia for the first openly transgender lawmaker, beating Bob Marshall, the Republican, who introduced the bathroom bill. Andrea Jenkins is now the first openly trans woman of color elected to the city council in a major U.S. city in Minneapolis. Think about all the bathroom bills from the last year or so. And then a bunch of trans people won on Tuesday. Not just Democrats, trans people. Justin Fairfax was elected to become Virginia's next lieutenant governor. With his victory, the former federal prosecutor will be the second African-American to win statewide in Virginia. Sheila Oliver in New Jersey, the first female African-American lieutenant governor in New Jersey. She's also no stranger to breaking records. She became the first African-American woman to be elected as assembly speaker in New Jersey and only the second black female speaker in U.S. history. Hold on. So Virginia and New Jersey, and this is important. So I've talked about on this show about how these conservative billionaires, the Kochs and the DeVos family and the Coors family, all of these rich, white, entitled conservative billionaires that have effectively bought Congress, were hoping to have a constitutional convention. And what that effectively is they would have been able to get together and rewrite the Constitution. Now, they weren't putting ads on TV or making flags and hats and t-shirts and waving them around and going, we're going to rewrite the Constitution. But what they did is they know that once they have 34 governorships, the Constitution that we've had for over 200 years, which I'm not opposed to rewriting, I'm just opposed to the DeVos and the Coors and the Kochs rewriting it. They shouldn't get to rewrite it. If anybody rewrites it, it should be us. But they were going to hold a convention once they got 34 governorships. And they almost got there. I think they were like one or two governors away. I mean, they were so close to being able to hold. So had they won in New Jersey, either that would have been it, or they would have needed just one more governorship to rewrite our Constitution. And not only did they not get that because a Democrat was elected in Virginia, but we flipped New Jersey. Now, obviously, that wasn't that gigantic because Chris Christie is wildly unpopular. I followed the ups and downs of Christie on this show, and it's been pretty amazing. There is a lesson to be learned from his story, but obviously we're not going to get into it now. But he left office with a 14% approval rating. That's through the floor. I think that's the lowest that a governor has ever left with. So the Republicans did not get Virginia, and they lost New Jersey. And this was not covered by the media, and this is why you come to Melvin. But we are now getting further away from the Republicans, donors, the Republican donors, being able to rewrite the Constitution. So that was one of the big stories that was not covered this last Tuesday that I really feel like more light should have been shined on. But it would make sense to not shine light on it because light was not shined on it to begin with. But you're hearing it here. We almost had our Constitution rewritten by billionaires that would rather we made, we had slave wages, weren't able to own homes, and poison in the air, poison in the food, just people that only do things for profit. They almost got to rewrite the Constitution, and that is not going to happen now. Getting into some of these other victories, V. Lyles will be the first African-American female mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina. Yvonne Spicer was elected the first mayor of the city of Framingham, Massachusetts. They're now big enough they needed a mayor, and she was elected their first mayor. Joyce Craig, Manchester, New Hampshire, the largest city in New Hampshire, just elected the first woman as mayor. Joyce Craig will be the first woman in Manchester's 266-year history to serve as mayor, unseating the Republican incumbent, Ten Gotsas. And there's almost nothing that guarantees re-election like being an incumbent. And we unseated a lot of incumbents. Tyler Titus won a seat on the Erie School Board, becoming the first openly transgender, there's another one, person to ever be elected in the state of Pennsylvania. Ravinder Bala. Now, this one hit me right in the feels. Hear me pounding on my chest. Ravinder Bala, and I apologize if I'm saying his name wrong, of Hoboken, New Jersey, was elected mayor Tuesday night. which will make Bala the first Sikh American. Now, forgive me, I don't know how to say this because I've only ever read the word. S-I-K-H, it's a religion. They wear the head wraps like some of the other Middle Eastern religions do. I don't know if it's pronounced Sikh or Sikh. I'm going to pronounce it Sikh because Sikh sounds weird. The first Sikh American to be elected to mayor of that city. Last week, he was the target of a bunch of racist flyers that showed a picture of him along with the words, "Don't let terrorism take over our town," plastered above him. By the way, we've never had a Sikh terrorist ever, but he's got brown skin and a beard and wears a head covering. And so that's all it takes for the conservatives to go full racist on him. And he still won. Elizabeth Guzman and Hala Ayala defeated Republican incumbents to become the first two Latinas elected to the Virginia House of Delegates. Wilmot Collins, Helena Montana, arrived 23 years ago as a refugee from Liberia. Collins is a 54-year-old naval reservist and a child protection specialist with the Department of Health and Human Services, and will now become the second black mayor in both Montana and Helena's history. In Montana, we're talking about Ryan Zinke country right now. Jenny Durkin will become Seattle's first lesbian mayor. She will also be the Emerald City's first woman mayor since 1928. Melvin Carter! Oh, already loving your name, sir. Voters in St. Paul, Minnesota made history by electing Melvin Carter as the city's first African-American mayor. My God, give it up! Just loving it! Kathy Tran, a former Vietnamese refugee, became the first Asian-American woman to join Virginia's House of Delegates, representing the state's 42nd district, and will replace David Albo, a Republican who served 24 years, but did not run for re-election. Janet Diaz will become the first Latina member of the city council in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Jonathan McCaller will become the first African-American mayor of Statesboro, Georgia, defeated another incumbent, Jan Moore. Brendan Barber will become Georgetown, South Carolina's first ever African-American mayor. Mary Parham Copeland will become Milledgeville, Georgia's first female African-American governor, beating another incumbent by just 6 votes. That's incumbent Gary Thrower. Booker Gaynor will become Cairo, Georgia's first African-American mayor. Kathy Murillo will become the first Latina mayor of Santa Barbara, California. Lara Coran will become the first female county executive for New York's Nassau County. Lisa Middleton is the first openly transgender, there's another one, person to be elected to a non-judicial office in California. She is joining the Palm Springs City Council. Mazer Salih will become the first Sudanese America to join the Iowa City Council following her win on Tuesday. And then Medicaid expansion in Maine. Dig this. So the legislature in Maine, and Maine has a Republican governor. His name is Paul LePage. The legislature in Maine passed several times after hearing from the constituency of Maine, the Mainers. Passed several times, it was like 4 or 5 times, to expand Medicaid, to enjoy the benefits of Obamacare, to join the ACA. And every time it made it to Governor Paul LePage's desk, he vetoed it. Nope, 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 nope. If you've ever listened to Paul LePage talk, Paul LePage is one of these wildly racist conservatives, deeply conservative. You need healthcare, screw you. Unable to do it, well, with the legislature, which they did do with the legislature, but then King Paul LePage decided that they couldn't have it. They put it up for a vote, and it passed in Maine overwhelmingly because this is what the people want. It's not stopping Mr. LePage, though. He's still trying to find a way for them to not have what they just voted for that they want.
City workers have taken down two Donald Trump honorary street signs near the downtown Chicago Hotel and Condo Tower. Mike Claffey of the city's Department of Transportation says the signs were removed from their posts near the Trump International Hotel on Sunday. He told the Sun-Times he doesn't know what was done with them. The removal comes about 2 months after a third Trump honorary sign in the area was stolen. Last month, the city council voted to strip the honorary designation from Trump because of his characterization of Chicago as a, quote, war zone during his campaign. The massive Trump sign on the hotel remains, but an architect is pushing for the installation of four giant pig balloons to block it from view.
So the disapproval of Trump really did start immediately after the election. That clip was from Chicago, post-election 1 year ago. I was going to play it here on the show, never got around to it. Think about it 1 year later, just the immediate disapproval of the fact that Donald Trump became president. They start taking down all these signs. People said, we don't want to live in a building with his name on it. We don't want to stay in a building with his name on it. We don't want to drink his freaking water. We don't want to drink his freaking vodka. We don't want to eat his freaking steaks to go to his dumb university. Just right away, there was just massive, no, we don't want. So it was clear that we could mount a front against President Trump. And we did so. And with last Tuesday's election results, we won. But the big prize is obviously 2018. And going into 2018, this is where it gets a little more shaky.
Unpledged delegates exist really to make sure that party leaders and elected officials don't have to be in a position where they are running against grassroots activists.
So that is everybody's favorite Florida congresswoman, the woman they love to hate, one Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And she said it right there. She goes, we can't have them running against grassroots candidates. So I avoid talking about this last week, but I feel like I should talk about it now. And I was convinced to talk about it by me because I sat down with a friend the other night at dinner and we were talking politics because Melvin never stops talking politics. And once I started talking about it, I said, crap, I should mention this on the show. Donna Brazile. And I'm not going to get deep into this, but let me give you a brief overview. So when you become the nominee of a party, you effectively become the leader of that party. Right now, Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party, the leader of the GOP. And when he got the nomination, he became the leader at that time. So his people took over the RNC, took over the GOP. And that's not strange. That's the way it happens, and that's the way it happens for both parties. George W. Bush did it. Bill Clinton did it. Barack Obama did it. I mean, this is just the way it goes. Because once you become the leader of that party, you get the nomination. You run the party now. You know, you don't get an official title, but you're now in control. You put your people in top positions. So the DNC, who leaned pretty hard for one Hillary Clinton and seemed to lean pretty hard for her right away. And we learned about all the shady stuff that they were doing in 2016 because it came out of WikiLeaks and Russian hacks and all these other things. But what we're learning now with the release of Donna Brazile's book is that it goes a little bit deeper than that. See, Hillary Clinton wasn't supposed to begin running the DNC, putting her people in top positions until she got the official nomination. She went to, probably seeing herself as an incumbent to some degree, she went to the DNC in 2015, or her people went to the DNC, and I'm doing all this from memory, and they said, hey, nobody's gonna win against me. I'm Hillary Clinton. They might run against me, and they did, but they're definitely not gonna win. So what do you say you just let us take over now? And that sounds shady as hell, right? And it kind of is. And the DNC says, well, it's not really the way things are supposed to go. You know, I don't know if we're going to do that. But the Clinton campaign knew that the DNC had a fair amount of debt. And they said, look, we know you're sitting on about $10 million in debt right now. We can help raise money for the party. Start helping raise money for the party right now. Remember, this is one of the things she got mad at Bernie Sanders about. He's not raising enough money for the party. And yeah, he wasn't. He was running for the people and just running as Bernie and did so without necessarily needing a lot of money, because he had a good message that resonated with real people, that even resonated with conservatives. So they go to the DNC and they say, hey, we'll pay down this $10 million in debt. You start letting us put people in these top positions right now. You let us effectively take over the DNC right now. And the DNC said, okay, the Clinton campaign pays off these debts, quietly puts their people in charge over at the DNC. And then we wonder why the DNC comes out so hard during the 2016 election. Now, we don't get to relitigate this stuff, right? Hillary Clinton became the nominee. She did get more votes than Bernie Sanders. So what the effect that the DNC had on the way that whole thing went down, we'll never know. Had they not gotten into those top positions at the DNC, it's hard to say if she still would have or would not have gotten the nomination, or Bernie would have gotten more votes or any and all the rest. But there is a problem with those superdelegates. We need to get rid of those. So what we have right now on the heels of Tuesday's election is we've got these gigantic wins with tremendous momentum. But then on the other side of that, we've got a lot more party infighting. We already had a lot of party infighting. You can go to just about any deeply progressive Facebook page or Twitter account. You will still see to this day the Hillary and Bernie people tearing into each other. But those are pockets. Those are little pockets here and there. I don't even see them as a microcosm. But to the degree that this Donna Brazile thing, the infighting that has resulted from this, can become a lot larger than it really is, it will exasperate those things that are happening in bar rooms and on social media. And if we want to lose in 2018, this is the dumb fight that we're going to have. So what should we do? We need to go ahead and as Democrats or Democratic-leaning individuals, that's me. I don't call myself a Democrat. I can't get too cozy with the party because they've got too many connections with the financial industry, the unregulated financial industry. But I'm not going to vote for a Republican. So I'm going to push for the Democrats to be better. So what needs to happen and needs to happen yesterday? We as Democrats need to drop this Bernie and Hillary crap and realize that we're all progressive and we all share a common interest. We also all share a common enemy, and not just a common enemy that we have as progressives, but a common enemy we have that we share with humanity. Nobody likes Donald Trump. Only horrible, awful people or people that are unable to admit that they made a mistake like Donald Trump. And going into the next year, we need to go ahead and have this conversation now. Have it now. Talk about it now and say, hey, the whole 2016 thing shouldn't have happened. It's not going to happen again. The party's going to become more transparent. Shake hands, hug, have sex, whatever you got to do to get over it. And then go into 2018. Because Donald Trump right away, right, because all this Russia stuff is going on. Donald Trump, every chance he gets, he's talking about the Donna Brazile book. And why is that? Well, it's the same reason that these Russian bot farms are buying these ads that are making trying to convince Hillary and Bernie people to fight against each other. The Russian troll farms, they didn't just buy pro Donald Trump ads. They didn't just buy anti Hillary Clinton ads. They also bought a lot of pro Bernie ads because they want the Hillary and Bernie people to fight. So the Hillary and Bernie people are fighting each other. They're not fighting Donald Trump. And that's what Putin wants. And I think that's what Donald Trump wants. And if we're going to have this dumb fight going into next year and stem the momentum that we clearly have on the heels of Tuesday's election, then it is we lose because of us.
I love the poorly educated.
He's got the poorly educated on his side. Let us, the smart people, not help him out.
We are replacing the current tax code with oranges.
So let's talk about the tax bill, so this is the fight that we need to have right now against the Republican tax scam. So the thing that's being pushed right now is if we go ahead and let this tax bill pass. But if we get behind it, there are ads pushed by the Kochs. And I'm going to talk about this every week because I want this on everyone's mind. When you call up your representatives, when you call up your House members and your senators, you call up your call your governors, call your mama. I don't give a crap who you call. Everybody you freaking know. This tax bill cannot pass. I am a small business owner. Let me give you a few examples. I'm a small business owner. And right now, I have a 30% liability for my business. Personally, for other money that I make through other employers, I believe that I pay between a 25 and 28% rate. But of course, those rates are dropped pretty good when you itemize your tax returns. And for my personal, I don't itemize it a lot, so I pay fairly close to that. I'm okay with it. The cost of living in a civilized society. But with the business, I try to bring that down a little bit more. And I'm able to do so because one, it's 30%. It's not higher than that. That's the top margin for me. And I get to claim lots of things, bringing the effective tax rate to much lower. So I'm still paying taxes on it, but I'm able to bring that down a little bit. And for me, small business owner, put more of that money back into the business. I get out there. I'm able to compete with the big guys. And yeah, right now I'm competing with the big guys in my town and it feels effing great. But with the Republican tax plan, they want to give $1.5 trillion. They want to blow a massive, massive hole in the budget, right? They want to give trillions of dollars to all their rich white friends. And they want to punch a gigantic $1.5 trillion hole into our budget. And they say they're okay with that because of how much awesomeness it's going to do. And so the call has been put out there. Well, y'all need to make some cuts and start making those cuts, I mean, now. So they go, well, what are we going to do? They want to get rid of the mortgage interest deduction, which realtors and homeowners, they don't particularly care for that. So they've come out against it. They want to get rid of some of the medical deductions that you're able to claim. Of course, the AMA and anybody with a body does not like that. Then they would like to raise taxes on small businesses. Small businesses honestly are the engine of our economy. It's not the large employers. It's folks like myself, you know, and other businesses that are slightly bigger than mine. But they want to raise my effective tax rate for my business to 40%. Which I can, of course, bring down again by itemizing, but they want to take away some of the things that I itemize. So here's what they're saying with their legislation. And don't tell me what you want to do. Show me your legislation and I will tell you what you want to do. So they want to bring down the tax rate for corporations, which is, I think it's 35%, but the effective tax rate is much lower. Hell, some large corporations like GE not only do not pay taxes, but they actually get a rebate back at the end of the year. And they want to bring that 35% down to 20. Now, already nobody's paying the 35. Most corporations that are paying the corporate tax rate are paying about 17, 18. That's the effective rate. But if they bring it down to 20, well, then their effective rate might be 2 or 3%. And if they're not paying any taxes at all, they're going to get even more money back. So that's for the gigantic businesses. And what about for little folks like me, the engine of the economy? They want to raise taxes on me. So what is that going to do? You cut them for the top margin and you raise them for the people at the bottom. This is why we had the Boston Tea Party. See, the Boston Tea Party really wasn't about the tea itself. See, the East India Company was getting a gigantic tax cut at that time that the smaller tea sellers were not getting. And so they came in to Boston Harbor with all of that cheap tea that they didn't have to pay tax on, but all the small local guys still had to pay tax on. And they weren't opposed to paying tax, but they go, hey, if we're paying it here on the bottom, they should definitely be paying it on the top. But the East India Company got a massive tax cut. And so the smaller tea sellers said, to hell with that. We're striking. They get on those boats and they start throwing that stuff overboard. Now it's worthless. Without any thought as to what the caffeine would probably do to the sea life. But it was always insane to me that we had the Tea Party. A pro-corporate group of people that used the name for one of the largest acts of anti-corporate vandalism ever as their name. So they want to cut the taxes on the top, and they want to raise my taxes here on the bottom as a small business owner. And then there's another thing. So the GOP has this thing with abortion. They don't really care about abortion, but God dang it, they sure like to pretend that they care about abortion. So the GOP Congress is doing two things. One, they're busting their backsides to make sure that you do not, if you're a female, that you do not have control over your own body. They would like to tell you, if you are pregnant and you do not want to carry that pregnancy to term, they want to tell you that you have to carry it to term. Forced delivery. They want to make damn sure you have that baby. And they say, hey, if you don't want the baby, what you can do is you can put it up for adoption. Ah, adoption. Yeah, okay. And I'm not opposed to adoption. My beautiful bride and I have considered adoption because we love children. And if you adopt a child right now, you get almost a $14,000 child tax credit to pay for the expenses of it, because raising kids is very expensive. So if you don't like abortion, then you more than likely love adoption. But the GOP is pushing for two things right now with respect to that. They want to strip you of your right to an abortion. And as a part of their new tax bill, they would like to get rid of that child tax credit for people that adopt children. I'm not even kidding about this. And this is one of those things that nobody's paying attention to. And if the GOP were asked about it, I seriously doubt they'd be able to explain it.
We are led by very, very stupid people. Very, very stupid people.
I suppose it takes one to know one.
You know how you make America great again? Tell Donald Trump to go to hell.
So, Papa John's, which is an awful pizza. I had a Papa John's pizza back in 2002. Yeah, and I remember seeing the pizza box because someone goes, hey, it says John. A lot of you don't know this. John is one of my legal names. And I was unimpressed. I was unimpressed by the fact that it said John. I was unimpressed by the pizza itself. Never had Papa John's pizza again. But Papa John's is all over the damn place. I watch NFL football this time of year. My team is the Seahawks. And I see his ads all the time. And then I hear him come out bellyaching a little bit ago. For those of you that don't know, John Shatner is the CEO of Papa John's, and he is a hardcore conservative. And he has been losing business because of his crappy pizzas. And he advertises incessantly. And so he goes, well, it's got to be because of the NFL protests. I'm losing money at Papa John's because of the NFL protests. Aha! Must do something about the NFL protests. And a lot of people go, no. No, your pizza really is just garbage. We don't like your freaking pizza. So this from Newsweek, the headline, the alt-right white supremacists claim Papa John as their official pizza. Perhaps this will help him with his business woes. Neo-Nazis and white supremacists have always been distasteful, quoting here. But now it turns out that their taste in pizza is terrible as well. The white supremacist website, The Daily Stormer, announced recently that Papa John's pizza is the official pie of the alt-right, posting a picture of the pizza with a swastika fashioned from pepperoni slices, and the caption reads, Papa John's, the official pizza of the alt-right. The pronouncement, of course, came after John Shatner was complaining about losing money because of what he said are the NFL protests. Quote, this might be the first time in modern history that a major institution is going to be completely destroyed explicitly because of public outrage over their anti-white agenda. The Daily Stormer writer Andrea Saul posted, referring to the NFL and adding disturbingly, the Negro fatigue. This is right on the website that endorses Papa John's now. The Negro fatigue caused by this whole NFL fiasco is reaching heights that I didn't fully expect. This isn't the first time the white supremacists have endorsed a brand and demonstrated how hateful ideology can permeate everything from sports to retail. Last November, the neo-Nazis said New Balance shoes were the official shoes of white people because one of the company's top executives criticized former President Barack Obama and said that he was supporting Trump. The Daily Stormer also declared that Wendy's is the official burger of the neo-Nazi alt-right movement after a representative of the fast food chain posted a picture of an alt-right meme on the company's Twitter account. New Balance, of course, released a statement saying that it is a values-driven organization, blah, 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 and it believes in humanity, blah, 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 integrity, mutual respect, blah, blah, blah. In an email to the Huffington Post, Papa John's said it condemns racism in all its forms. I wouldn't do that, Papa John's, because those white supremacists, they eat a lot of pizza. They prefer it with the white sauce, though. Quote, we do not want these individuals to buy our pizza, the company said in a statement. Well, then, Mr. Shatner, you probably shouldn't be speaking ill of the African-Americans who are being shot and those who are recognizing that African-Americans shouldn't be shot by police in our streets. But I'm just saying.
There is an FEC filing for a candidate for president named His Majesty Satan, Lord of the Underworld, Prince of Darkness, who has also filed to run as a Republican.
2016 was a ridiculous year, not just because of the candidates and not just because of the stories that came out and not because Donald Trump became president, but because every year, and by the way, it only costs $50 to run for president, not to run a whole campaign, but for you to register with the FEC, $50, and you're officially running for president. At least according to the FEC. And there were a ton of people. There was D's Nuts and all kinds of funny names that people paid to have put to register with the FEC as running for president. And of course, Satan decided to run for president in 2016. And of course, Satan won. All jokes aside here, Satanism. So Christianity and Satanism. I've mentioned it on the show before. I studied Satanism for years, and here's why. I grew up in a deeply Christian home, and I suffered a ton of abuse in that home. I would learn at church about a peaceful, a passive, loving, respectful Christ, you know, the Son of God. I'd learn about that stuff, and then I'd get home, and I would just get the hell kicked out of me. And I said, Mom, what about the Bible? And she said, the Bible says don't spare the rod. And I looked, and it does. And it also says that you are allowed to murder. Yes, murder your children if they talk back to you. That is in the Christian Bible. Of course, we don't practice those things. But the fact that that text is even in there, that should just give everybody pause. Perhaps the Bible is more conservative than I've given it credit for in the past. So in Satanism, so I studied Satanism because I heard how awful it was. I heard how evil it was. And I heard that they kill animals and that they kill children. And I go, oh man, not that I want to do that stuff, but I'd really like to know the psyche involved. You know, what drives a person to want to join a religion that backs those kinds of awful things. And so I picked up a copy of the Satanic Bible. And it wasn't at all what I thought it was going to be. And then I picked up Satan Speaks and a whole bunch of these other books that full of essays written by Anton LaVey, the official head, the first official head of the Church of Satan. And the Church of Satan wasn't actually established as a church until the 60s. Before that, it had just been this boogeyman because your hero can only be as good as your villain is. And when they wanted people to join Christianity, saying that you're going to live forever, you're going to go to heaven, and you're going to be with your dog when you die, well, that didn't convince enough people. So they had to come up with something. So they come up with Satan. And telling people that Satan are going to, you know, eat your children and, you know, you're going to be left behind and all this stuff. Oh my, oh good, how can I get saved? Hey, you go to Jesus. Hey, you get saved. Now you're going to heaven. But that's not what, there's no Satanism. And they talked about Satanism and animal sacrifice and all this other stuff. But what I learned about Satanism is they're dead set against that. So when Satanism became an official religion, most of what they believe in tends to lead towards what I think of as libertarianism. Because the most important day on any calendar year in Satanism for you is your birthday, because that's the day you were born. And you are the most important person in the world. And they get everybody thinking like this. And it's not bad. It can really help build some self-confidence. And it did for me too. You know, and then some of the other holidays, they recognize the solstice. So they're really close with the earth and all this. It's not so bad. But a couple of the sins, a couple of the unforgivable sins that are connected to Satanism are the abuse, the hurting, or the killing of animals or children. It's against Satanism, the official religion of Satanism, to hurt or kill animals or children. It is never, ever acceptable. But in Texas recently, they decided that they were going to bring back the paddle. They were going to start allowing educators to begin beating your children in school. So in rides the Church of Satan. Quoting here from Sky Palma over at Dead State, the Satanic Temple is going after what they refer to as sadists in Three Rivers, Texas. Why? Well, because last summer, the city's public school district voted to allow paddling as a form of punishment for children. The Satanic Temple spokesman, Lucian Graves, says the school administrators who think that hitting kids is okay need to be replaced, and that sentiment was reflected in a billboard that was put up in Three Rivers, Texas. The billboard reads, quoting here, "Our religion does not believe in hitting children. Hopefully our billboard will give pause to a passerby who will be forced to confront the fact that the school district is being operated by depraved and ignorant sadists who have no business being in education," Graves said, according to Patheos. "The billboard should be a wake-up call that the school district trustees who voted 6-0 for corporal punishment, and that they need to be replaced by competent and humane members of the community who have children's best interest at heart." In a press release, Graves cited one of the Satanic Temple's 7 tenets, which says that one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. They don't believe in violence. The decision to reinstate corporal punishment in Three Rivers schools is not unique, as it joins 26 other districts that have approved the practice. The billboards direct people to the Project Children Project, which is run by the temple and aims to protect children from abuse in schools. The website states that the Satanic Temple believes that children should not be objects of physical violence or psychological abuse. "We have prepared a letter that could be signed by students, which inform their schools that their deeply held beliefs do not allow them to be hit in school, physically restrained, or placed in solitary confinement, or deprived of access to the bathroom." Think about that, Christians. You're being called out for your inclination to violence by the Satanists. Just sort of let that sink in.
"Discontent deepened and sharpened partisan conflicts. Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seems more vulnerable to conspiracy theories and outright fabrication. Discontent deepened and sharpened."
October 19th, 2017, my 39th birthday. For those of you that knew me personally, during the aughts, when George W. Bush was president, there was nobody I had more white-hot hatred for than George W. Bush, except, well, for maybe Dick Cheney. And I just saw the wars, the tax cuts to one degree, but the wars as this whole other horribly awful thing. People being slaughtered for the dumb things that you're doing. Our kids, you know, our soldiers being slaughtered in these faraway lands and these dumb wars, which, by the way, we are still involved in. And then, so George W. Bush disappears from the spotlight for a little while, post-presidency. And then comes back, you know, little here, little there, but really comes back on my friggin' birthday in 2017 and says, "Donald Trump, You're an evil man.
According to our intelligence services, the Russian government has made a project of turning Americans against each other. This effort is broad, systemic, and stealthy.
They're strange times that we're living in. From the Church of Satan telling Christians that they're too damn violent, to George W. Bush coming out and sounding like he has more sense than not just the current iteration of the Republican Party, but more than this person. Only Donald Trump could make George W. Bush seem like he's not that bad of a president. Like, it really could be worse. All right. Let's get into a couple of fun stories, and then I'll let you go. I'll get you out of here.
Three words. Not good for the country.
So this from a local Houston CBS affiliate, quoting here, in Austria, they refer to people who don't look up from their phones as smombies. What's a smombie? You're probably way ahead of me on this one. Those are smartphone zombies. The headline here, light poles now have airbags on them because people keep running into them. Think about that. They walk down the street and they're just, oh my God, my phone. They don't look up and they smack into poles. They walk into traffic. They walk off of cliffs and bridges and all kinds of fun stuff. And so now they've begun in Austria putting airbags. Think about this. If you're not aware of your surroundings, it's going to be pretty impossible for you to protect yourself. But in Austria, they still can't get people to pay attention. You look at any street in America right now, can't get anybody to freaking pay attention. They're all staring at their damn smartphones. Perhaps we need airbags on our posts. Quote, it's such a problem that was deemed that one out of five people are at risk of injury because they're distracted by their phones. So the city council is bringing awareness by putting the airbags on lampposts. There are messages on the airbags. It seems to be working. When the crews talked to people, they said seeing them did remind them of how much they have their head down and are staring at their phone that should be in their pockets when they're walking down the street. According to the story, the situation is so severe that it is now pedestrians who are involved in more accidents on the city streets than anybody, including cyclists, moped drivers, and car drivers.
We tortured some folks.
And then there's this story that's been making the rounds, and this I don't mind the Christmas holiday as far as time off goes, but it does make me just ape crazy. All the Christmas music. But finally, I pulled my story from KHQ. Quoting here, psychologists say that playing Christmas songs on a loop can be bad for retail workers' mental health. People working at shops at Christmas have to learn how to tune it out. Tune out Christmas music because if you don't, it really does make you unable to focus on anything else. This, according to clinical psychologist Linda Blair, talking to Sky News. You're simply spending all your energy trying not to hear what's your hearing? Too much Christmas music can be bad for your health. But don't worry about it. Worry about it because remember, there's a war on Christmas. Wait. Are we still having a war on Christmas? Oh, no. Wait a minute. According to President David Duke, the war on Christmas is over. And we are now going to get to say Merry Christmas. And all of us, including you, we are all dreaming about a war on Christmas.
These are the familiar sights and sounds of Christmas. Jingle bells and fa-la-las. But that was before the war.
Time to wage war on Christmas. The first bomb allegedly dropped in Rhode Island.
No one threw themselves to the ground screaming about Jesus.
Look, the liberal left, the atheists, the tree huggers, the socialists, they're all against Christmas.
War on Christmas.
The attack, the assault, it's just unbridled and seemingly unprecedented against Christmas.
Christmas is a huge symbol of the cultural struggle in this country and has been for years.
Santa just is white.
Angry atheist armed with an attorney.
Hostile toward Christmas and more victims in the war on Christmas.
Unquestionable that there is an attack on Christmas, which is kind of the tip of the spear.
They are not going to stop Christmas.
In my first term, we ended the war in Iraq. In my second term, I will win the war on Christmas.
If I had not done the campaign, the forces of darkness would have won.
Try not to let yourself be made too crazy by the supposed upcoming war on Christmas. Trying to find a way to end the show with a little bit of levity. And I kind of hope that did the trick. So we are coming up on the holidays. I may or may not put a show out the week of Thanksgiving. I probably will because I'm a freaking workaholic. And there was a bunch of stuff I didn't get to get to on today's show. So I will be getting more stuff out next week, certainly. We'll see what happens the week after. Christmas might get kind of shaky. But hey, we're coming up on the holiday season. Now, maybe take a little bit of a break from all this stuff. We did get some big wins on Tuesday, and we're coming up on Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's going to be time with families. Make sure you get in as much of that as you can, because once the calendar turns, well, we're going to be in the midterms a lot quicker than you think, and the news cycle is going to turn, and it's going to turn against us, and we're going to start seeing all the bots on Facebook and Twitter trying to change your opinion, and hey, just get through the holidays. Relax. Don't let Christmas music make you insane. It does to me every year. It is not a victimless crime. All right, folks. Thank you for being here. My name is Melvin. You have been listening to The Fire You Can't Put Out. Official home, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or on the Google Play Store for Android users. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail. Just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are The Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. Been friends with Kevin for like 5 years now. Pretty awesome. Thank you, Kevin. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.